You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, brought to you by Full Sneak Gear. Check out their entire lineup at fullsneakgear.com. Also, be sure to check out our entire stable of podcasts at sportsmansempire.com. New from Moultrie Mobile, the Feed Hub offers first-of-its-kind cellular connection and control for nearly any spin cast feeder on the market. When used with the Moultrie Mobile app, you can monitor feed and battery levels, run feeders on demand, receive alerts when feeders are clogged, and remotely adjust feeding times. The Feed Hub is ideal for anyone who maintains feeders. Remove the guesswork and save time by planning feeder maintenance before you drive to your hunting property. For more information, visit MoultrieMobile.com. Welcome to the Nine Finger Chronicles Hunting Podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and I can't believe that 2024 marks 10 years of podcasting. Over the last decade, I have had the pleasure of talking with hundreds upon hundreds of passionate outdoors men and women who share the same excitement for hunting as I do. Whether you hunt public lands or private property, shoot traditional archery equipment or high-powered rifles, we all have one thing in common, and that's our love for the great outdoors. This year, I plan on continuing that tradition and bringing educational and entertaining content to your ears. Thank you for your continued support, and I hope you all have the best seasons of your life. Good vibes in, good vibes out. And here we go again, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. I'm your host, Dan Johnson, and it is the first couple days of April as I'm recording this, and it's snowing, right? We had a really beautiful March, and now we've come into April, and we're just getting hammered. It's snowing outside, it's cold, it's miserable, and I hope the temps kind of warm up for this weekend. Why? Because I am taking my oldest son and my daughter youth season turkey hunting this year. I think I've discussed this a little bit, but I bought a 410. Vortex sent me a red dot that is going to help in the accuracy and aiming. And I'm really looking forward to getting out there, listening to some turkeys gobble, trying to put a game plan together to get them to walk in front of myself and my daughter. She's going to be sitting between my legs. And I got a little monopod, I guess you could say, set that in front of her, rest the gun on it. And I'm just kind of hoping that these turkey walk right in front of us. The game plan is listen for gobbles. I'm going to set up somewhat close to where the gobbles are. And then my stepdad, who's going to be sitting next to my son's just going out for the experience, not necessarily the, he won't be hunting this year, I don't think. But my stepdad is going to try to do most of the calling. I'm going to call, and then I'm going to stop. And then he's going to call, like keep calling. And we're going to try to get the turkeys to work right by us. That's the goal anyway. Now, does it ever happen that way? No, it never happens that way. But last year we got really close. I learned what I needed to do, where I needed to sit. And I'm hoping that we can get the job done on her very first turkey ever. And she's excited for it, which is really important. She's like, Dad, what are we going to do this? Dad, what about this? Dad, what about this? Which tells me that she's interested in it. And I'm looking forward to getting out there and seeing what happens. And it's kind of revived my love for turkey hunting, because that's what I started off out with a long time ago before. Oh, man. Now, I did a little bit of deer hunting. I did a little bit of turkey hunting. But the first deer turkey I ever shot was in 2001. And from then, I went on a slaying spree for several years. And And then I kind of got into deer hunting and turkey hunting kind of took a back seat. But now that my daughter and my son are interested in going, dude, I'm really looking forward to this upcoming season. So that's what I got going on. Today's podcast is going to be with Zach Gregory of Michigan. Now, this is a crazy story because Zach only hunted during deer camp, you know, the traditional deer camp that several states have. And it was with a lot of people on a not so big property, and he didn't find the kind of success that he wanted. And so what did he do? He branched out to archery, and then he branched out to mobile hunting and public land. And the next thing you know, he's a full blown run and gun mobile guy. And so he has an interesting story, and I figured I'd share it on this episode. Hopefully you guys enjoy it. I know there's a lot of you out there who take part in hunting public, and we have that conversation. So it's a really, really fun, really good episode. Now, before we get into today's episode, though, we got to do some commercials, and we do have a new partner, and I'm going to spend most of the time on this new partner, and that is Feed Hub by Moultrie Mobile. Now, many of you know that Moultrie Mobile is cellular trail cameras. And they also now have something called the Feed Hub. Now, the Feed Hub is a contraption that you can connect to any SpinCast feeder on the market, and it allows you to monitor the amount, to monitor when you feed. It lets you know if there's a clog that you can work from the Moultrie Mobile app. It allows you to check and see how much feed is in your hopper if you're running low, if there's any issues. And really what this product is designed for is anybody who uses a feeder, whether you're allowed to bait in your state or whether you are allowed to supplemental feed after the season's over. This is an awesome product for somebody who doesn't have the ability to live close to the properties that they hunt, given the fact that they run a feeder. So the best thing to do is go to MoultrieMobile.com, check out the Feed Hub, and take a look at it. It connects right to the Moultrie Mobile app, so you can check your Moultrie Mobile trail cameras and monitor the Feed Hub, the feed that you're feeding this deer. So go ahead to MoultrieMobile.com and check it out. Also want to send a huge shout out to Tethered, Wasp, Vortex, Code Blue Sense, Woodman's Pal, and of course Huntworth and Full Sneak Gear. Please go out and support the companies that support this podcast. If you have any questions, let me know. I do have some discount codes available on some of these I can share. Some of them I can't share unless it's through communication. So go check that out. I do have a discount code for Wasp, wasparchery.com, and that is NFC20. I have a discount code for Code Blue Sense. That is NFC20. I have a discount code for Vortex Optics. It's a 10% discount, but you have to go to eurooptic.com and use the number nine, followed by the word finger, and then what is it? 10. Nine finger 10 is and the number 10. And that's the discount code there for Vortex. Outside of that, most of these companies are running spring or Father's Day type of discounts, so be sure to check them out and let them know that Dan Johnson, the old Nine Finger Wonder, sent you. Ladies and gentlemen, enough talking. I really appreciate every single one of you who takes time out of your week to download and listen, and not only to the Nine Finger Chronicles, the Hunting Gear Podcast, and all the other podcasts on the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network. Sending good vibes your way. Good luck this turkey hunting season, and let's get into today's episode. I get the microphone over here. 3, 2, 1. All right, ladies and gentlemen, welcome to another episode of the Nine Finger Chronicles podcast. And today I am joined by Zach Gregory, and he's from the Mitten. Right? The Mitten of Michigan. Now, every time I talk to somebody from Michigan, they hold their palm up. I've never met anybody from the UP, any by the way, and so I've never had anybody like do this. And for those of you who just listen, I'm holding my hand up and then a couple fingers to show the state of Michigan. But where about in the mitten are you located?
I'm in southeastern Michigan, not too far from Ann Arbor, maybe 45 minutes or so.
Big buck capital of the world?
Just outside of that.
Just outside of that. Okay. I gotcha. Now, are you a Wolverines fan?
Of course.
Oh, man. I don't know how
much. Here we're a house divided. My wife is a State fan, unfortunately. We've got some issues as far as raising little ones. Mm-hmm. So go blue, baby.
Yeah. Well, I tell you what. When it comes to Big Ten teams, there's a lot of schools that I dislike. Like, I dislike Nebraska. And this is just because I'm a Hawkeye fan. They're right next door. You can't really hate a team like Northwestern or Illinois because they never really compete, even in the Western Division, right? That's complete crap compared to the East, right?
Correct.
And so when we have the introduction of, what is it, Oregon and UCLA and USC and there's one more.
Texas.
No, not Texas is in the SEC, but there's another Pac-10 school that's coming over to the. Those are the three for sure that I know. There's one more. Is it one of the Oregon schools? It's Oregon. So
is it?
Yeah, Oregon, UCLA, USC, and I forget that. Anyway. What I'm getting at is it's not going to be a cakewalk. You know, Iowa won't be able to have negative yards in offense this year and make it to the the Big Ten championship game is what I'm getting at.
That was a rough outing for you guys, Dan.
Yeah.
But, I can say as a proud Detroit Lions fan, although the history's been absolutely brutal, I appreciate you sending us Sam LaPorta.
Oh, yeah.
He's a workhorse, baby. I can't wait to see him develop.
Yeah, dude's a stud for sure. Let's see here. What the whole point of this little football conversation, not really in football, it's just because people hate greatness. Like, especially if you root for a team, and then usually, I'm saying law of averages, it's either Ohio State or it's Michigan on top, right? And so, I can't root for them. I was in Columbus, Ohio one time, and it was during the Ohio Deer Classic in Columbus. And I was wearing an Iowa Hawkeye jacket out into the college bar scene. I mean, this was 20, I was like 26, 27 years old, something like that. And I went to this bar and some of the Ohio State football team was there. And the guy goes, "You're wearing the wrong colors, buddy." And I lipped off to him a little bit. They didn't do anything because they knew that if they got in trouble, right? They weren't gonna. I'm like, "Oh, whatever, blah blah blah," and so I had to leave the bar before I got my ass beat. So,
hey, those are big fellas, man. Yep. I hate Ohio State. Just to go on the record, I absolutely hate Ohio State. I think that comes natural in any Michigan born. Any football fans, I hate the Buckeyes.
Yeah. A lot of people do. A lot of people do. Especially if you're in the Big Ten. So, Zach, what do you do for a living, man?
I am a mortgage loan originator. I'm based out of Ann Arbor, Michigan. I work for a company that primarily lends in the Midwest. And it's always a good time, right?
Yeah. You might have just, and this is no offense, but I've had some guys on here like a loan originator. Now, you could say it's like, have you seen that Simpsons episode where it's like bring your kid to work day and they're like, at least we're not Milhouse. His dad works at the cracker factory and it's just like all this awesome thing. So it could be fun, but is loan originator a boring job?
It's not great.
Okay.
But there are some perks
okay.
to the job, right? Financially, it can be great, obviously. Building relationships with clients is always a wonderful thing.
Mm-hmm.
Helping them accomplish their goals is great, but overall, not so much.
Gotcha. Hey, man, they all can't be like, I don't even know, like, what I'm trying to think in my head right now, what would be the best possible job to have? And like, obviously, like, professional hunter or someone who makes their living hunting, you know, I don't do that. I make my money by putting podcasts out on the internet. I don't make my money going on hunts or anything like right. that. So I don't know, man. Good. You know, you're lending your, let's talk real quick. What is the housing market like right now in the United States? Is it a good time to buy a house and get a mortgage?
It's a complicated question. Interest rates are elevated, obviously, but you know, it is a great time to buy right now.
Yep.
Home prices are not coming down. I just heard a statistic the other day that said if you were back in the day, if you were waiting for interest rates for home prices to drop in 1977, in order for home prices to drop, you would have waited until 1993.
Wow.
So that's wild, right?
Yeah.
Home prices aren't going down. Interest rates will come down eventually. We were expecting a little bit more of a drop in interest rates this year due to the Fed's report in December. But outside of that, we haven't seen much of a change at all. But, you know, inventory's low, homes are going for over asking, and, you know, it's tough out there.
Yeah.
You know?
How close is the real estate market to the land market? Do they show similarities at all?
There are similarities. I have seen recently that there are good deals on land. You know, maybe not, you know, 100-acre parcels or,
yeah.
or whatever, but, you know, small plots of land, you can still manage to get away with a relatively cheap price. Right now in Michigan, I know that the average home price is around $475,000, which is kind of wild to think about for a first time home buyer. Right.
Right.
It makes things a little more difficult, but, we have options, obviously. This is, you know,
yeah.
I'm not trying to get too far into the weeds on the,
yeah.
on the mortgage side of things, but, you know, it's difficult right now. You know, I
yeah.
think all of us are feeling the pressure of inflation. Everything's expensive right now. So
that's an understatement.
You know.
Jesus. Everything.
Yeah.
And he got, when he had three kids in it, it's like, my wife's like, we're just making it by. I'm like, we're not just making it by. If you have a pontoon boat and you get herring extensions and your kids are in all these extracurricular activities, you're way more than just getting by, right?
We have doing just fine.
Yeah, we have chosen to live this lifestyle, right? We're not eating bread and butter and just like shivering at night because we can't afford to turn the heat up, right? That we're
right.
we're a long ways from that, but it's still it's not cheap to live in the United States right now.
It is not, and you know, hopefully inflation will come down, you know, over the next 12 months, but you know,
yep.
we got to deal with what we have, you know, worry about the things we can control and don't worry about the things we can't.
Yep. Well, I just got to hit that jackpot and then everything will be okay.
That's right.
That's right.
That Powerball is looking pretty good right now.
Right.
Ain't it?
Right. Let's say all of a sudden you had $500 million in a bank account right now.
Mm-hmm.
What would your very first purchase be?
I'd probably update the car. Honestly, the car is looking pretty rough around the edges.
Yeah.
But outside of that, you know, my dream's always been having having a big old piece of land where I can hunt and manage and all that stuff. My wife prefers to be on the water. Not a water guy. Nobody wants to see this physique. It's not great, Dan. But there's negotiations there with the wife. So
yeah,
we'll see how that pans out. But honestly, I just love to have a big ass piece of land.
Yeah.
And be able to do what I want to do.
Yeah. They say you know, I won't tell anybody that I won the lottery, but there will be signs like when all of a sudden I just stop existing on social media anymore.
Right.
It's probably because I ran into some kind of a dollar amount that I don't need to be on social media anymore.
Right.
Yeah.
I mean, that's a lot of money, Dan.
Yeah.
You could do
whatever you want.
A lot of things without social media. Right. Yeah.
I would own the biggest. I would talk to someone who sells land or go around to as many people as I know here in Iowa. And I'd just be like, hey, listen, I want the biggest farm in Iowa. I want it. And then you'd never see me again because that's where I'd live. And I'd just hunt deer all year. Or not all year, but that's what I would do is deer hunting stuff. I would instantly turn into one of those guys that I talk about all the time. Is like, you know, who I say deer hunting's easy for these people because they throw a lot of money at it. They get big bucks because of this is actually something that I have been thinking about a lot lately for some reason. And I don't know if it's out of spite. Or out of curiosity, I'm not really sure how to express this, but it is, you know, everybody. I don't want to call it hate, right? It sounds like I'm hating on the people who I say this to, and I want to get your thoughts on this. This is just a fact. If you have a lot of acres and a lot of money. And you kick everybody off the property and you manage that herd and you do selective cutting and you plant food plots and you manage a piece of property strictly for deer hunting, you don't have to be a good hunter to shoot those deer. You can be good at habitat management. You can be good at basically what you're doing is you're making hunting easier for you, but all that stuff that happens outside of, some will argue with me on this, but I don't believe that. Everything that's done outside of the hunting season, that's not hunting. That is stuff done to make your hunting easier and make your bucks bigger. And so you can shoot the bigger bucks, right? And so, I don't know, I'll probably get crucified like I always do on shit like that.
That's all right. I mean, that's hard work too. You know, I respect the guys that do that. I haven't had the opportunity to have a firsthand experience in that, but you know, it's hard work. It takes time. It takes money. Mm-hmm. You know, it's definitely not easy. But I would say over the last few years, I have hunted some private land. Of one of my buddies, and it does seem to be a little bit easier to see deer mm-hmm. and all that fun stuff, but it's still deer hunting.
Yeah, it's still deer hunting in a way. I mean, it's different types of deer hunting than what you and I do, I'm assuming, but
sure.
it is still deer hunting, but out of a giant box blind over top of a large food plot, you know, that had thousands of gallons of diesel fuel to do that. But anyway, before people just stop tuning in and listening to me bitch.
Another day is here and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Let's see here. Have you always been a Michigan resident your whole life?
Always. Born and raised. I grew up in the same county I live in.
Okay.
Haven't gone very far.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Well, there's reasons for that, man. I went all over the place for a while when I was younger, in my early 20s, and I ended up back in Iowa around, you know, I'm an hour from where my parents, where I grew up, from where my parents live. I'm an hour from where I was born, and I'm right exactly where I want to be in life, right here in Iowa. So, Michigan is a state full of hunting tradition. All right. Did you come from a hunting family?
Not so much. I got started in hunting. My dad always took me to, you know, the family deer camp and all that fun stuff. But essentially it was once a year at deer camp was when I got to hunt until, you know, my later teens and early 20s. That's when I started to really hit the ground running. You know, my dad always said, if you want to kill, you know, deer, don't go to deer camp.
Yeah.
So it's you know, we have 80 acres up north, and man, it doesn't produce a whole lot unless you're looking for a bunch of does.
Yeah. Talk to me a little bit about the tradition of deer camp, what it's like, who was all involved, was this something that you really look forward to every year?
Absolutely. This was it for me, right? This was the Super Bowl of my season. You know, like I said, we didn't see many deer, we didn't kill many deer, but you know, the times with family and friends drinking and playing cards and, you know, all that fun stuff, that is what deer camp is to me. In a way, I hate to paint that picture for you, but you know, the reality of things is it was fun as hell watching those old timers, you know, get into a few pops and lose a bunch of money to a young gun like myself. So I was more than happy to take the benefits from that.
Yeah, it sounds to me like your deer camp was a little bit more social and a little bit less deer hunting.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, my uncle used to say that he's not going to go out on opening day a shotgun unless it's 60 degrees.
Mm-hmm.
That's not happening in Michigan in November.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So, it was definitely more social, but great times. Some of the best memories I have are up at deer camp. It's a beautiful thing. You know, unfortunately, we didn't get to hang much on the old buck pole. So
yeah, did you ever have a deer camp experience where somebody got lucky on a real big buck and it just, when he brought it back to deer camp, the whole, like, it just blew everybody's mind? Did you ever have a experience like that?
So I wasn't there for this specific scenario here, but there was one year it opened on like a Tuesday or something like that. It was an odd day, and my dad and I couldn't get off of work or whatever, and 3 days before the opener of shotgun, on the opener of shotgun, 3 days before we were able to get up there, a family outsider, if you will, a guy that we weren't necessarily friends with, but he was associated with the family. He went up there and killed a big old 10 point.
Yeah.
And we were like, what in the hell? You know, we felt like our pockets had been picked.
Yeah.
You know,
who invited this guy?
Forever. Who is this guy? He didn't even stay at deer camp. So, You know, but it is what it is. Congrats to him. You know, looking back on it, we were all kind of pissed, but you know, it's all right.
Is he still come to deer camp?
Yes, he does still come to deer camp.
What are you doing? So is this like your brother or somebody like that?
No, it's a far off uncle's best friend.
Oh, okay.
So he's not even related, and he goes up and stays in a hotel, not in the cabin we got, and you know, I try to avoid conversations with that man.
Well, hopefully none of your relatives or him hear this.
Well,
if they do, maybe this will be like, hey man, get the hint.
Yeah, I'll worry about that later.
Yeah, there you go. Okay. And so how has deer camp kind of evolved from when you were a kid to where you are now?
Well, to be honest with you, I haven't been up to deer camp in a few years.
Why is that?
Because I wanted to kill deer.
Okay.
There is not a lot going on. I mean, I hunted up there from the age of 12 whenever I had to be, you know, within a certain distance of my dad, to my early 20s, and not a single buck was taken, not a single doe was taken. I mean, the number of deer up there worthy of shooting were, it's not great. Right. So, I thought for me personally, my goals as a hunter were a little different than what was going on at deer camp. Although I missed the socialization and the playing cards and taking those old folks' money, I just had to make the jump because I just had something a little deeper that I wanted to, you know, to approach.
Right.
You know.
Right. So it sounds to me like you had a little bit of a shift in what you defined as success. Is that about accurate?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Like I said, no deer camp for 15 plus years or whatever it was. And, you know, I thought maybe I could come down south and see what the public land was about. And I just got addicted.
Yeah.
It's just a beautiful, like a light switch, Dan. It was night and day.
So you went from only hunting deer during the firearm season in Michigan, right? To jumping into to what some people, and I'm not saying all people, because I have heard some good things about Michigan public land, but depending on who you talk to, some of the toughest, hardest, most difficult public land to hunt as far as deer hunting is concerned. How old were you when you jumped into Michigan public?
I was probably, I believe that was 2018.
Okay.
So relatively new, to the game, but,
6 years ago.
In the years, you know, in more recent years, it's been a snowball effect for me as far as my knowledge, harvesting,
all
that fun stuff. You know, it just satisfies me in a way that not a lot of things do.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. And so what was that first year or the first season when you said to yourself, okay, well, I'm doing it different now. I'm going to go hunt public. And was this with a gun or with archery tackle?
Now I'm an exclusive bow hunter.
Yeah.
I love archery. On public lands, I personally don't like going out during shotgun season. You know, I'd rather be safe than sorry, you know, and in a terrible scenario there. But, you know, the first year was definitely rough. You know, it was a lot of learning, a lot of figuring out who I was as a hunter and what my preferences were. You know, and things have changed dramatically from that point until now.
Yeah. And so what was it like? Tell me a little bit about that first season of strictly archery, strictly public in Michigan?
Well, I say what I said, but I ended up tagging out within a month of each other. I think I killed my first buck October 3rd, and I killed my second buck that year November 4th.
Okay.
So I had success, but smaller deer, right? Which was fine with me. I was very proud of what I did. It was wonderful getting that first one, out of the way. I feel like sometimes the first one is always the hardest, can be the hardest. I was in a ladder stand that year, hunting public. I wasn't worried about access, or I was just setting up on sign in a ladder stand.
A lot of work
went into that, but you figure out real quick what you're doing right and what you're doing wrong. That first year was good and obviously bad.
For you, as far as your first year on public land, you tagged out.
Yeah, it was a beautiful thing. I was happier than a clam.
Yeah. And so here's what I'll say. Age. All right. So you started this public land journey around 30 years old, give or take a couple years.
Correct.
Right. Okay. Do you think that your age allowed you to use your brain more efficient to cut the learning curve down because you were older compared to someone who's like 16, 17, 20?
Absolutely. I think that, at 30 years old, I feel like I was able to kind of compartmentalize a lot of the situations that were going on in the woods and really think through the process of how to get better as a hunter. Mm-hmm. Those folks who've been hunting since 15, 16 years old, they have a lot of experience over me. Right. But, I'm not comparing myself to them.
Yeah.
I'm not worried about them. I'm worried about myself and what I can do to get better. I do think it's helped moving forward, especially in the years after that initial year, right? Mm-hmm. Because you make notes on what you learned and maybe mistakes you made and things like that. So I was definitely able to take that, I call it maturity.
Yeah.
My friends might not agree with me being mature, but I was able to take that knowledge and just apply it and just continue making those steps to becoming a better hunter every year.
Yeah. And so what was your big takeaway? Sometimes a guy will go out, he'll be successful right away, and he doesn't understand any takeaways because he found success. Right. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you can sit in a ladder stand and you can have success and you can be the opposite of mobile. Right. And you can find success. Mm-hmm. Other times you can't. So were there any big takeaways of that first year?
The big takeaway for me was the ladder stand. There were a lot of very slow days.
Yeah.
In 2019, I bought a mobile setup and it has opened the doors to my hunting life. I just can't stress it enough. I mean, you're not going to move a mobile or I'm sorry. You're not going to move a ladder stand on state land 15 times just to get into your sweet spot. Right.
Right.
So yeah. Having a mobile setup was the biggest, difference between year one and year two, and obviously I'm fine tuning that as I progress through my hunting career, if you will.
Yeah. When it comes to your mobile gear, so that next year you went mobile after that first year. Okay. So out of curiosity, what was the pieces of mobile equipment that you bought to get yourself mobile right off the bat?
Well, initially, I bought one of Andre's lone wolf stands. Mm-hmm. And just this, I mean, for me, the simple fact that I could put everything on my back and walk out and change locations if I needed to, or, you know, whatever it may be. I mean, that was the huge, huge thing for me. I love that stand.
Was it a custom gear stand, or was it an original lone wolf?
I believe it was original, but I could be wrong on that.
Yeah.
But since then, I've moved to the saddle, mm-hmm. and it's just the saddle is the way to go. I mean, in my opinion, it's the most comfortable thing you'll be in the woods, outside of maybe, you know, a block spine where when you got the recliner in there or whatever it may be. But that saddle stand allows for a lot of good things. You know, you can move around the tree a little bit better than, you know, what you could have maybe did in a ladder stand. But that was the big thing for me, because if I didn't like a stand, or if I had a couple day period where I wasn't seeing anything, we're pulling everything down.
Yeah.
And we're moving.
Yeah.
Yeah. Find sign and set up on it. Right.
Yeah. I always think, like, how many, because back in the day, one of the first hang-ons that allowed you to get into any tree was the original assault, the lone wolf. Right. Mm-hmm. And so I just imagine, like, how many guys went mobile for the very first season using a lone wolf, an original lone wolf. Right. I mean, it had to be that particular product, and their sticks, climbing sticks, had to be a game changer for a ton of hunters, public and private.
It was absolutely the game changer for me. I mean, that's when I started to really, you know, even if I didn't have shots at the deer I was hoping to harvest, I mean, I was getting eyes on them, right?
Yep.
Whereas before I was stuck in that location, you know, and you limit yourself to what you can do and see. So, it was a no-brainer for me. I even tried to get all my buddies on board with the mobile setup, and I'm so thankful that technology is, you know, here and available to us.
Yeah. Yeah. And definitely a lot of things have changed since then. I believe I got my first lone wolf in would have been 2005. Either 2005 or 2006. I remember the first year I had it, someone told me about it, but I bought a set of sticks and the stand from somebody. I can't remember if it was like through like a Facebook group, or, I mean, that's damn near 20 years ago. And so anyway, talk to me a little bit about how that changed and what you had to learn, because sitting in a ladder stand every time with maybe different winds, maybe the same axe, I'm guessing what happened is when I was a ladder stand guy, I'd go to the same stand no matter what the wind was, because I wanted to hunt. I would have the same access route because it was the path of least resistance, so it didn't matter where I was at. And so I really didn't know what I was doing. But when you hunt a single stand long enough, you know what the wind is doing if you're paying attention to it every single time. When you get mobile, your mind has to be mobile too, because there's so many different scenarios that play out when you're, you know, traversing the countryside looking mm-hmm. for a spot. That first year you went mobile, what were some hard lessons learned?
Well, I fell out of a tree. That was exciting.
Sorry for laughing, but
no, everything was okay. I didn't get seriously injured. Just, you know, a reminder that you got to be careful and make sure everything is dialed in, you know, safety harness, all that stuff.
What happened?
But the biggest thing that I personally learned was with the mobile stand. And you obviously have more ground available to you. But with the wind in particular, I really enjoy hunting a quartering wind, coming off a 90 degree. That seems to be, I've seen so much movement on maybe less than perfect wind days mm-hmm. because of that. Whereas in the ladder stand, you said it best, right? Where that ladder stand was set up on public was right on a trail.
Yeah.
It was easy access. It took me very little time, although it was a quiet walk in. It wasn't the ideal situation. Mm-hmm. I did take $2 out of it that year, but it just wasn't what I was looking for.
Gotcha.
But being able to kind of dictate where your wind's coming from and, you know, where you're looking and all that fun stuff, the mobile stand is by far, I'll never go back to a ladder stand.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. And so what were the next couple of years like for you when you were hitting that mobile tree stand game?
Yeah, so in 2020, I ended up having a little tag soup. Not a problem. I have no problem with that. I made some big strides with the mobile setup. Just learning how to work it, right? Mm-hmm. Learning the ropes, if you will, on getting into the tree quietly and effectively, not banging my straps around or, you know, whatever it may be.
Yeah.
Just honing in on me being more precise with where I wanted to be and how I wanted to hunt. It allows you to grow. Like you said, mentally, you have to be a mobile hunter too, right?
Right.
So, I think that's probably the biggest thing I've learned since getting back into it. But, every day you could have a different stand location. Every day you could have a different wind. In Michigan, where I'm at, typically we're seeing a west wind. Sometimes you'll catch a southwest wind. But, you know, it's generally going to be the same, right?
Right.
That was appealing to me because at the time my history had been just stuck in one spot, right? In 2021, I started hunting a little more private. I've got a buddy that's not too far from me who owns 60 acres and he manages things. He kills some big deer. And that was a learning experience to me, you know. Like we said at the top, it seems to make the managing seems to make the hunting much easier. Mm-hmm. But I learned so much being on that private. I haven't killed a deer on private yet. But just seeing deer behavior, the way they interact with each other, the way they travel, the way they eat, you know, you get a lot more face time with those deer on private than you do public. There were nights I'd go out to my buddy's house and see 30, 40 deer. In public, 30, 40 deer happens every 2 years, 3 years, you know?
Yeah.
So, it was definitely an eye-opening experience for me, but, you know, in a weird way, it kind of cemented why I love public land so much. It seems so much more difficult in terms of finding your spot, hunting the right days. There's a challenge to state land that I enjoy. Not that I don't enjoy public land, or I'm sorry, private land, but it's just a different energy I have going into private than it does public.
Right. Okay. What's your message to someone, maybe even in Michigan, who talks shit on public and says it's too high pressured and it's too, there's no big deer there and it's not worth hunting?
Well, although I agree with some of that, there are big deer on public in Michigan. Mm-hmm. You have to just work a little bit harder than the next guy, right? You have to go where people don't want to go. Yeah. You know, I saw a statistic that said that, most public land hunters walk a quarter mile into the woods. A quarter mile?
Mm-hmm.
That's not a lot, right?
No.
I mean, I don't know if there's any validity to that statistic, but it just made me work that much harder, right?
Yeah.
I think that there's opportunities on public in Michigan to be had. Are we Iowa, where we're seeing, you know, the upper echelon of the nation's antler measurements? No.
Yeah.
But I know a guy, a kid I went to high school with, shot a 140 on public, which is great, right?
That's a stud deer.
Yeah. So there's definitely opportunities out there, you know, and part of my love for public land hunting is the game with other hunters.
Yeah.
That's something that is my favorite. You know, I do a lot of scouting, and, you know, these guys, September 1, have their stands up and all that fun stuff. Another perk of having a mobile setup, you can do the scouting in September for an October hunt and see where these guys have set their stands up, and you can play that. I mean, it's just another card in the deck, right?
Yeah.
So that to me is one of the most fun things ever. I just love being where people don't know that I am.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, it's tough on public, but
it's enjoyable. It's enjoyable. I've talked to a hand, you know, I've done a lot of these podcasts, and there's this one guy, I don't think it was Michigan, man, this was like 4 years ago or something like that. I was talking to a guy, it might've been either Pennsylvania or Ohio where this guy, and he said, I hunt he's like, it's not crazy during the archery season. During the gun season, he stays out. He doesn't hunt. But during the archery season, there's a handful of other hunters. But one of his favorite things to do is, he's like, this is what makes it worth it. Like, I'm not saying it's all about this, but what he was trying to get at was shooting a deer, staying in the back, keeping it in the back of his truck or something until someone else in the same parking lot showed up. And then he would be like looking at it, and then they would obviously come over to take a look at it. And they're like, holy cow, I didn't know deer like that existed up here. He's like, yeah, they're around, you know, and not give them too much information, but just kind of flaunt this buck right in front of them, basically saying like, I outworked you. I not only beat this deer, but I beat you too. And so he's like, there's a little, you know, it may sound arrogant, but there's a little bit of enjoyment in that for him.
I mean, for me, that's absolutely right. I mean, I personally have never done that exact situation, but I tell you, if one of the other folks that were hunting the same state land that I was hunting came out and I had a big old buck in the bed of the Jeep, you bet I'm showing that sucker off.
Right.
So, you know,
right.
I totally understand it. I mean, I think, you should be proud of what you do on state land. It's not easy. You know, a lot of hunter numbers up here. But I mean, you gotta brag a little bit, right?
Right. Just a little bit. That never hurt nobody. What do you take away from hunting public that maybe you don't get an experience on private ground?
The first thing that comes to mind is respect. I think that folks could do a much better job of respecting the land, respecting each other. It's apparent to me that some of the way that some people conduct themselves on state land is subpar, in my opinion. Mm-hmm. Leaving trash and you know, banging around. I don't know. I just feel like the general respect for those around you and the resources that we have out there. Whether you're hunting squirrels or you're hunting rabbits or deer. I think that, you know, we all need to be careful about what we're dropping, you know, in terms of garbage. There's so much garbage out there. You know, and I, so first and foremost, that's the number one for me. But, you know, state land takes a lot of boots on the ground work, right? Yeah. So private land, you have the managing, you're planting crops, you're cutting trees, you're burning, things like that. That's all hard work, right? But I put in countless miles on state lands, you know, in my area, just to find deer that, in my opinion, are shooters.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, I do feel like there's a difference. Like I said, there's just a different energy that I have. I feel that on state land, I can be a little bit more aggressive, because I know that folks are in certain spots, whereas on private, you know, you have your ladder stands. Those ladder stands have been there for a decade. You replace the straps and that's all she wrote, right? Mm-hmm. That's your stand.
Yeah.
But, it's definitely a challenge. And you learn constantly. Mm-hmm. Every trip out, you're learning something new, whether it's, oh, there's a new scrape or new rub, or you found a trail that you didn't know was there.
Yeah.
You know, once you get in there, it becomes a little more obvious on what maybe you had initially missed, on the first or second, third walkthrough.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, man, it's very important to pay attention to that. This just kind of popped into my head. As a public land hunter,
mm-hmm.
I heard a hot take the other day, and it was some guy basically saying, hey, listen, if you have access to private and you are saving that for the rut, this guy was pretty much just like, stay off public, because there's guys out there who don't have private ground to go to. And really what you're doing is you're ruining their experience on hunting public. What are your thoughts about that?
Well, again, it goes back to respect, mm-hmm. right? If you walk in the woods and you see a guy who's, you know, in your spot, I'm using air quotes there, you know, go find somewhere else, mm-hmm. right? If you've done your due diligence and you've done your research throughout the off season, you know where the deer are, mm-hmm. even though, you know, option A might not be available to you. You've definitely got A, B, C, D, you know, and the list goes on, right? But, you know, I can't emphasize enough the respect, you know. Mm-hmm. You know, I've helped guys on state land that I've never met before track deer. Mm-hmm. And I would want that if I were, you know, in their shoes, right? Yeah. So I do think that respecting each other's space on state land is important. The deer are somewhere, right? And right. That pattern changes every day. Well, kind of. But that pattern changes throughout the year, especially. And you can get on good deer. I just don't think that there's one spot on each public piece that is the spot, right? I mean, there's probably a couple on in each public land scenario.
Yeah. Yeah. Would it be disrespectful of me? Let's just say here, I own I have access to a 100-acre farm in Michigan, somewhere close to you. And mm-hmm. I don't want to ruin that. I want to keep it for the rut so I can go in there and have better odds. But in the meantime, I still want to hunt. And I go to a piece of public where you also hunt. Is it disrespectful of me to go to the same place that you hunt and hop around and try to be mobile on this place and bump deer and run into you and things like that? Is that disrespectful of me, or am I just enjoying public land too?
beautiful thing about America is we have the right to make those choices.
Yep.
I think that I don't consider that to be disrespectful. I wouldn't care. Mm-hmm. You know, part of why I love public land is because I get to play the other hunter game, right? Yeah. So I personally wouldn't take any offense to that. Or, you know, if I found out you had a 100 acre farm in the epicenter of big bucks just down the street, I wouldn't care. You know, but to each of their own. And that's something that I've tried to stay open-minded about. You know, this isn't my state land, isn't my land.
Yeah.
Right. It's not your land. Yeah. It's just a resource that we can all take advantage of. And, you know, if you want to hunt private Dan or public Dan in Michigan, feel free to.
Yeah.
You know, I would assume that chances are probably a little bit better on private, you know, through and through. But, you know, do your thing, man.
Yeah, for sure. Let's talk about. How many, so you've been hunting public now for about 6-7 years?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Are there any unwritten rules, right? Like there's certain rules in sports that they don't exist on paper, but like, for example, baseball, right? If a pitcher throws at one of your guys, your pitcher is going to throw at one of them, right? It's an unwritten rule. It's just one of those things that happens. Some unwritten rules are good. Some unwritten rules are bad. Okay. Are there any unwritten rules that you figured out on public in Michigan?
In my opinion, the big one is just proximity to other hunters, right? Yeah. There was a year where I missed a stand in my preseason scouting. I missed a stand where this guy was, and I was maybe 50 yards from him in a mobile setup. I'm never trying to encroach on other people's area. Mm-hmm. You know, to that extent, obviously, surely not my goal, but, you know, there's obviously conversations that can happen on public, that you might not get on private, but, you know, another one might be, and I've had this happen where guys are in your stand.
Yeah.
They're sitting in your tree stand. I personally don't like that. But I think a lot of that opinion comes from not necessarily trusting the others that are around me. You know, not everyone's going to operate like I do in the woods.
Right.
Not everyone's going to have the same goals or, you know, that kind of thing. So just for the sake of my equipment and in my efforts, throughout the year, I just don't like people sitting in my own, in my stands. But with a mobile setup, that's another perk, right?
Yeah.
Take that shit down and you can move it wherever you want. Right.
Right.
So,
Is there an actual law about that or not? Like if I find a tree stand in the woods, is it free game because it's on public, or do you happen to know any rules?
I'm not familiar with that. I mean, I personally would also not call a DNR and be like, this guy's sitting in my tree stand. Like, yeah. We got to get him out of here. If there is, I'm not aware of it. I personally don't care that much. It's just more of an annoyance to me. You know, going into the hunt, you're optimistic. You've picked the right day. The wind's right. And then you got this guy sitting in your tree stand thinking he's going to kill the same deer you've been looking at for, you know, a few months.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll tell you this, man. After hearing some horror stories about people cutting cables or cutting lines so that they basically turn into a death trap when you try to step on the platform. Or
very dangerous.
Yeah. Like, dude, the only time I'd leave a tree stand in the woods on public land is when I am coming back to that exact same spot the next morning, right?
Right.
And so I will leave it up. You know, I put it up. I'm there till dark, and then I'm there before sunrise the next day. That's the only time on public I'm leaving up. I'm leaving that. So there's that. Other than that, man, any any life lessons learned on public or going mobile that we should hear about?
Wear your harness.
Yeah,
I'll tell you, there's a and I know that's kind of, you know, beating a dead horse, right? But man, there's a pine tree out on state land that looks a lot like a telephone pole right now, because my big ass wrote that sucker down from 12-15 feet. So just be safe. I honestly just want to respect the land and take care of my trash if I drop any. And you know, we're all out there to enjoy ourselves, and I just don't see any reason why that can't be the case.
It sounds to me like the word of the day here, you know, as far as this conversation has been concerned, this has been a good BS session, but respect the land, respect the privilege of being able to hunt state land or federal ground, and then respect others who use that. And so that's a pretty good message.
Yeah, I mean, I think respect could go even further than the hunting industry, right? I mean, I think if all of us had a little bit more respect for certain things, I think the world would be a better place. But, you know, I just, we're all out there trying to enjoy nature and bring home some meat or antlers or whatever your goal is personally. You know, we're all out there relatively trying to accomplish the same goal. There's no reason why we can't, have a common respect in that sense.
Fact. That's a good point. Well, Zach, man, I really appreciate you taking time out of your day to hop on and BS with me today. Thank you. I appreciate it. Good luck this upcoming season. And man, we'll talk to you when we talk to you.
Awesome. I appreciate it, and thanks for having me.